Good morning. I'm Tommy Howell, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International, broadcast from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego, and recorded today on location at Muir Woods National Monument near Mill Valley, California. Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places. From the beaches, to the mountains, to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. Redwoods have a special place in Western conservation culture. Along with being the tallest trees in the world, redwoods are also some of the most rot-resistant trees, and by virtue of their bark, size, and typical surrounding ecosystem, redwoods are amazingly fire-resistant. Other than man, or the occasional well-placed windstorm, redwoods have no natural enemies and can thrive for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Growing in groves of five or six in a small, thin coastal band from Big Sur to the Oregon border, redwoods once covered some 2 million acres of the Northern California coast. But due to overlogging and a lack of understanding about the redwood forest ecosystem, those once great stands have been denuded to the few stands which survive today. While most surviving old-growth redwood groves have since been preserved in various California state and national parks, some old-growth redwood groves do survive today on private timberland, and calls for their preservation occasionally percolate to the surface. One of the few surviving stands of old-growth redwoods in the San Francisco Bay Area, Muir Woods, lies in a canyon along the Pacific Coast in southwestern Marin County, and was one of the first National Park Service units of what is now collectively referred to as the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Like classic old-growth redwood forests, it relies upon fog for regular moisture, and this abundance of fog results in a locally wet environment which ensures abundant plant growth similar to that seen in the Pacific Northwest. Named for the great naturalist, the savior of Yosemite, and the founder of the Sierra Club, John Muir, Muir Woods was set aside as a national monument in Muir's honor by his friend and fellow conservationist, President Theodore Roosevelt, in 1908 at the urging of California Congressman William Kent after a Sausalito Water Company announced plans to dam the canyon. Joining us today to talk more about Muir Woods National Monument is National Park Service Ranger Lou Sehan. Ranger Sehan, welcome to the program. It is very nice to have you here. Thanks for making some time. Welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Thanks very much, Tommy, for being here.
I was wondering if you could go into some greater detail as to how Muir Woods was established as a national monument. And I'm wondering, how did this water company in Sausalito plan to dam this canyon?
About 100 years ago, probably even longer than that, this canyon was privately owned. It was a wealthy person's private preserve, and only his friends were allowed to come and hunt in it. And this was Samuel Throckmorton, and his daughter took over ownership, and she allowed the Tamalpais Sportsmen Association to hunt here, mainly to protect this area because people were coming here already. This place is a destination for many of the hiking clubs. That was a popular activity back then and still is. And so a member of the Tamalpais Sportsmen Association, his name is William Kent, was approached when the Tamalpais Land and Water Company heard about the North Coast Water Company's plans to dam up Redwood Creek. And so they approached William Kent and asked him to do something. And Mr. Kent talked it over with his wife, Elizabeth, and they decided to purchase the canyon back in 1905. And they owned the property for about 2 years. Mr. Kent wanted to create a western national park here. And he and his wife went about building trails and fences and picnic tables and privies. They had an inn built over by Camp Ellis Eastwood, and a train that used to come pretty close to the canyon, not in the canyon, but fairly close. And so they had plans to bring visitors here to see the canyon. In 1907, the North Coast Water Company persisted, and they sued the couple in Marin County courts, and they were going to take away the land under eminent domain. And before that could happen, because Mr. Kent had these plans of making Muir Woods a national park, he was a close friend with Gifford Pinchot, who was the first U.S. forester, who also was a close confidant of Theodore Roosevelt. And with Gifford Pinchot working in Washington, and Mr. Kent and another man, Frederick Olmsted, they put together a sort of a package of maps and information about Muir Woods, and they wanted to donate the land. It took a bit of work because William and Elizabeth Kent were the first private citizens to ever donate land to the federal government. Hmm. And Theodore Roosevelt thought it was a wonderful idea. In 1906, a law was passed called the Antiquities Act. And the Antiquities Act actually preserved the country's southwestern potteries and treasures of past civilizations. And so they were able to argue the redwood trees, the coast redwoods, were an antiquity of the United States. And so President Roosevelt took possession of the land under an executive order. But they weren't able to give all the land that the Kent family wanted to give, because the Antiquity Act kind of limits the footprint. So even though the Kent family wanted to give about 611 acres to the government would only take 295 acres. And then Mr. Kent spent the rest of his life, from 1908 till about 1928, giving small parcels to Muir Woods and increasing the acreage to 560 acres, which is what it is today.
And so the reason that the monument was named for John Muir wasn't because of any particular advocacy on John Muir's part. It had more to do with Mr. Kent, President Roosevelt, and they really admired John Muir, and that's why they decided to name it for him.
Well, actually, President Roosevelt asked Mr. Kent, why didn't he name it after the Kent family, because it was such a generous gift? And Mr. Kent replied, well, I have five husky sons, and they should be able to carry on our family name. If not, I'm willing for it to be forgotten. I prefer to name the park Muir Woods National Monument.
Muir Woods is essentially an island of conservation. You're at the base of Mount Tamalpais, and at the end of a canyon where non-wild water is draining through on its way to the sea. So how does Muir Woods maintain its natural integrity with all of these non-native intrusions?
With each administration, supervisors of the monument, particularly the current site supervisor now, Mia Monroe, she has told me when she first came here, the canyon was just a sea of blue, and she thought it was heaven. And she didn't realize at the time that it was actually forget-me-nots. And they were an extremely invasive species. And it's a continuous problem or a battle to make sure the monument is free from invasive species. The threats that we have currently are forget-me-nots, erharta, which is a grass from South Africa, forage grass, and then also French broom are the three ones that we try to stay on top of. And it's a continuous battle, as I said, but she has tried to keep the monument free of these invasive species. And if we can keep small areas free of them, then we kind of extend out. And then we have a number of volunteers that come. We have volunteers that have come for years, decades. They pick a single invasive species, for example, the French broom, and they come every week and battle the French broom. When we start pulling weeds, we really do think it's a battle and that they are an army. In particular, French broom, they can put out thousands of seeds, and their seeds can last in the seedbed for decades. And as you pull up each crop of French broom, the seeds germinate and other plants come up. So it is a continuous battle.
Does Muir Woods benefit by having Mount Tamalpais State Park adjoining it? And I mean benefit ecologically, like as a wildlife corridor?
Absolutely. Wildlife need to have continuous corridors. And Mount Tamalpais and Muir Woods, we share a watershed. Muir Woods is in a canyon owned by about 96% by a public agency. And so there's about 4 or 5% that is occupied by residences. And so our watershed is relatively pristine, considering that we get more than 800,000 visitors a year. And we also get salmon. We have coho salmon and steelhead salmon, and the coho is endangered. And as we continue to restore the watershed, we have various projects in the National Park Service to restore it. And as we work to restore the habitat for not only the coho and the steelhead salmon, but other wildlife as well, we actually are improving conditions for people. And we never want to say that people are separate from nature. People are part of nature, but we just need to learn how to manage it more carefully.
How remarkable is it you're getting salmon up here now?
Yes.
That's amazing.
It is very amazing.
Can you talk about some of the typical plants and trees other than redwoods you find at Muir Woods?
The redwoods dominate the valley floor, and we have a second story of plants. Within the redwood area, ecotone, we have tan oaks, hazels, bays, red alders, huckleberry plants, coffeeberry, and blueberry in some at the tops of the hills. And as you go from the valley, like for example on Ocean View Trail, that's a very beautiful trail. As you go from the valley up to the ridge on the Ocean View Trail, you actually go to another ecosystem. The forest starts to transition from a redwood-dominated one to a Douglas fir mixed ecosystem to an oak woodland. Then you go through a coastal scrub, and then there's a small patch of grassland up there. And then as you come back down the Ocean View to the Lost Trail, to Fern Creek and the main trail and on the canyon floor, you go through those ecotones in reverse. And so this is really lovely. And there's a change of climate and there's a change of light as you climb up. The elevation is probably around 1,100 feet.
Is there any chaparral mixed with the oak?
Just bits, and it the trail doesn't really take you close to it, but if you look up, you can see it through the trees. Because there's a variety of ecotones, there's a variety of animals and plants as well.
And you're at a great latitude to have all of these ecotones happening within such close proximity to each other.
It's wonderful, yeah. So it was the original intention that Muir Woods was a living museum or a living laboratory. Within very close proximity, you get to go and see all of these things.
Can you talk about the role fog plays with the redwood forest?
It plays a critical role and may be the reason why we have redwood trees here in Redwood Canyon. The redwood range, as you had mentioned earlier, goes from Monterey to north of the Oregon border and within 30 or 50 miles of the coast. And so Muir Woods is sort of in the central southern part of the range. So the stresses are more pronounced here than they would be up north in the Coast Redwood Range. And fog in the summertime is really their main source of water. Redwood Creek that runs through Redwood Canyon is a perennial creek, but the redwood trees help. They provide a biological service in that up there, several stories high, about 20 stories high, 25 stories high, they pull fresh water from the fog in the summertime. And then they take a little bit of it, of the fresh water for themselves, because they're able to absorb the water through their leaves. And then if there's extra, they kind of shunt it to the understory plants. And that's how the understory plants get water and moisture in the summertime. And we go in the summer, we could go through months and months without rain. It gets very, very dry here.
I've read there's concern that there's less fog than there was 50 or 60 years ago, possibly due to climate change.
Yes.
Is there any way Muir Woods is able to address that, or is it more of a matter of just helping do some research on that lack of fog?
Yes. Just recently, I believe it's UC Berkeley came out with a study. I believe it was Todd Dotson in his climate studies, and he came out with that there's 30% less fog within the past few decades and related to climate change. And so what Muir Woods tries to do, I think our mission is to educate and to interpret what's happening. And also we invite scientists to come and do their research here.
Well, that's a great resource here.
Yes.
What a great place to do work.
Yes, wonderful.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International, broadcast from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego, and recorded today on location at Muir Woods National Monument in Marin County near Mill Valley, California. And we're talking to National Park Service Ranger Lou Sehan. We're talking about the ecology of Muir Woods and the history and also the importance of sound and silence at Muir Woods. And more information on Muir Woods can be found at www.nps.gov/MUWO for Muir Woods. nps.gov/MUWO. Also, thanks to Lindsay Bartsch at the National Parks Conservation Association office in San Francisco for her help in facilitating this edition of Tree Huggers International. We encourage you to learn more about the National Parks Conservation Association at www.npca.org. That's npca.org. Also, a special thanks to Paul Lancour for his technical assistance and help in making this edition of Tree Huggers International possible. And Lou, I alluded to this just a moment ago, but there's been some concern for some time at our nation's national parks about sound and silence and the value of quiet. Grand Canyon National Park has been working for years to restrict or limit noisy airplane and helicopter flights over the park. And in some high points in the Sierra, way above the tree line, you may find yourself keeping company with jet airliners beginning their descents into airports like Reno or Fresno. So why is natural quiet so important, not just for the health of Muir Woods and the park experience, but also for the visitors who come here?
Muir Woods, because we're so close to the Golden Gate Bridge, only about 25 minutes, and we're in a canyon. And the trees are naturally quiet. They're not silent, but they're quiet. There's other noises that are happening, especially in the wintertime when the creek is full. You can hear the sounds of water, waterfalls. As people come into the forest, especially if they come early in the morning, all of a sudden your ears are just filled with these natural sounds. If the wind is in the canopies, it surprisingly sounds like you're under an ocean. It comes up with wave upon wave of wonderful, lush, rich sounds from the canopies of the trees. And then intermixed with that are the sounds of the Pacific wren or the pileated woodpecker. Sometimes if there's river otter going up the creek, you can hear it. It's family turning stones as they run up the creek. And then just on particularly quiet days, when it gets so still, and you listen very carefully, you can actually hear seed fall on the forest floor. So all of these qualities of an ancient primeval forest would be lost when there's background noise, as you know. People need to have a place of refuge away from the sounds of the city. And as the population of the Bay Area increases, right now it's like 6.5 million or 7 million people in the Bay Area, and 50 years is supposed to go up to 12 million. As that population increases with all of the transportation and digital devices, people will be able to come to Muir Woods, hopefully, to listen to what just these very, very subtle sounds. These sounds sort of strikes a chord within all of us because we are part of nature. We are wired to hear these sounds. And when we're moving in a way to listen to them, suddenly we become more calm. People have described it as a spiritual experience, but it's definitely an inspirational experience, and it's just very restful.
Well, Muir Woods has established a designated quiet zone at the Cathedral Grove here. The Cathedral Grove is really great, doubly famous because it's the location of a memorial plaque left by the delegates of the first United Nations conference in 1945 to President Roosevelt, because he died about a month before the conference happened. So why was the Cathedral Grove chosen for this designated quiet zone other than the wholly appropriate name for the grove?
I believe it was because when the first United Nation was in the works for a very long time, and what I understand is that it was very near and dear to Franklin Delano Roosevelt's heart to have a worldwide body that would strive and work for peace. And so while they were planning to come out here, they were looking around for an experience other than the work, because they worked for several weeks in San Francisco. And there happened to be a man, his name was Drury, and he was in on the planning, and he recommended Muir Woods because he's very familiar with this place. And so the delegates came out dressed in their overcoats by bus down winding Muir Woods Road and walked to the grove and sat and listened to great speeches from people all over the world about world peace. When people come here, they may not be thinking about quiet or natural sounds, but it's such a beautiful place. It's awe-inspiring, and they're overwhelmed by the sights and the fragrance of the forest, and maybe not realizing that on a very quiet day when we don't get too many visitors, for example, early in the morning or late in the afternoon, we're open from 8 to 8 in the summertime, so usually in the midday it's really busy. And it's a different experience, but early in the morning or late in the day, maybe the visitors don't realize what it is that they're experiencing. So we get an opportunity to kind of accentuate that experience by talking about the natural sounds. We have signage, and we have a project that's being planned to improve the signage regarding the Cathedral Grove. And also, people who come here quite often are familiar with the natural sounds. The commercial bus drivers, for example, we have a core of them that come here quite often, and they encourage people to walk quietly. The Muir Woods Trading Company, which is a concession here, they have really strove to accentuate the quietness of the forest with their signage. They also have a sound meter out there that's interactive that shows the decibels of the creek, and people can see that physically. And then on our website, we try to promote the natural sound. So there's many opportunities that we can reach out to people as they come here and tell them about the natural sounds of a beautiful forest.
Are there other National Park Service units looking at what you're doing here?
Actually, there's an entire division. They're dealing with light pollution and sound pollution. They head up a team of scientists, interpreters, and educators trying to promote the natural sounds of national parks throughout the entire system. Grand Canyon is one of them.
Is Muir Woods, the kind of reverence you have here, you walk in and you really feel surrounded by everything, and it almost seems to ask you to sort of keep your voice down.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Canyon is another kind of reverence. And when you see the Grand Canyon, you want to exclaim, oh my goodness, do you see this? It's funny how the reaction to what you're seeing is different, but how the appropriateness of the situation may still be to sort of keep in mind that solace and quiet are an integral part of the best national park experience.
Right. By extension, there's many more natural areas outside of parks, you know, federal parks, state parks. Even in the backyards of urban residents, there are quiet places they can go to. What we're finding among the younger generation, among the children, is that they are growing up in such a noisy world that to come to a quiet place like Muir Woods is kind of uncomfortable at first. You know, they're not sure how to accept it or how to enjoy it. And so they kind of try to make noise and things like that just to feel comfortable. And so we try to greet all of the students that come here and explain to them what it is that they're experiencing, so that they would have a better enjoyment of the park. But I would say that the best thing that could happen is that people would take away with them a message that wherever you're at, whether it's a park or a quiet little corner of your backyard, when you're in nature, is to walk quietly and to be mindful of the other things that happen that tend to live there. Animals have such incredible sense of hearing that's so sensitive that they can hear great distances, and with all the noise that's in the world, we're really having an impact on their mating behavior, on their survival, and on their nesting behavior. So I think that just like I believe this generation is learning about leave no trace, it's very hopeful that we begin to teach our younger people about quietness in walking in nature.
It doesn't seem like that's something you'd have to emphasize. It almost seems like you'd want to be quiet at first. It's funny that a lot of kids, they just come from noisy places, and being someplace quiet is uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one of the things that the Park Service tried to accomplish this past year in our plaza area. It used to be that cars would come right up to the visitor center and just kind of get out of the car because everyone's all sped up and, you know, from where they're at and just their travel and their trip.
They want to get out of the car.
Yeah, they want to get out of the car and, you know, just the noise of the car and things like that and what they're listening to. And they get to the park not realizing that they're sped up.
Yeah.
And so we have about 1 acre area out there to help people to slow down. And it's sort of our transitional area. And so as people walk towards the visitor center, you get that much more of a chance to just kind of decompress. And then when you get back to the canyon, you realize that you are suddenly walking in a rhythm that's very natural. And that's sort of the same with the rest of the forest, is that you're just slowing down, you're breathing deeper, and you're becoming more calm.
It gives you an opportunity to appreciate that you are entering someone else's home.
Exactly, yeah. It's our foyer. Some people have called it the foyer.
That's great. You must know every corner of this monument from your time working here. What continues to surprise you or amaze you about Muir Woods? And what makes you happy about being here?
Well, I don't know every corner because I do try to stay on the trail. And so,
duly noted, yes.
So, you know, even as a park ranger, I think we have a greater responsibility because we know so much more about how our footfall can impact the forest floor. And the Redwood Forest, it's extremely sensitive and extremely fragile to walk on the forest floor. What happens is that there are plants that are struggling to survive in the deep shade. And so if people walk on it, like if I were to walk on it, I will bruise those plants. And then pretty soon there's a little outline of bruised plants. And then the next person that comes by and says, well, I don't want to really hurt the rest of the forest. I'll just walk on this little path that I see. And then the next person. And pretty soon, very quickly, we have social trails. And as the social trails become more compacted, they begin to really impact the roots of the redwood trees, which are extremely shallow. They're surface roots. And that's what we saw in Cathedral Grove. And that's why the fences came up in the 1950s, is that these massive trees were being impacted by all the footfall and they were starting to fall. People like the fences because they're so rustic looking, but it's really a way of keeping sort of a boundary where people can walk and where we're trying to protect the forest floor. So I don't really know every corner of the forest. And that's what's wonderful, I think, about working here every day. People show me different things and things that I have probably walked by 100 times and not really seen it. And it's such a complex place that it's wonderful when someone else points out something to you that you haven't seen before. It's very surprising. I guess the third part of your question is, what do I like about being here? Is that I feel very fortunate to be in Muir Woods, and I don't ever take it for granted, because there almost every day someone says, boy, you're so lucky to be a park ranger, and I totally agree with them. So I'm happy that I'm here. Like the forest, it's very ephemeral, and we need to really strive to take care of it, or else it could be gone. Thank you very much for coming. This has been wonderful. You've hit all of the wonderful things about, the wonderful qualities about Muir Woods National Monument. We have 2 missions, and that's to protect the forest, but also to make the place as inviting as we can to people. And so we have gone through a great deal of trouble to put up trails and to maintain it. Our trail crews work very well inspecting the trails to make sure that they are safe. Come to the national park early if you can, or late, or come during the shoulder seasons, like in the wintertime or in the springtime. Summertime, it gets extremely busy. People are parked way down the road. Whenever it's nice and sunny, we get a lot of people. They all have the same idea of coming to a national park. but you really do miss out if you don't come out in the wintertime, because that's really one of the best times of the year to come.
Lucian, National Park Service Ranger, very nice having you on the program today, and thank you very much again for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Tommy, for being here.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. I'm Tommy Howe. Thanks once again to National Park Service Ranger Lou Sean for making some time for conversation for this special edition of Tree Huggers International, recorded on location at Muir Woods National Monument near Mill Valley, California. Again, you can find more information on Muir Woods at www.nps.gov/MUWO. That's nps.gov, nationalparkservice.gov/MUWO for Muir Woods. Lindsay Bartsch of the National Parks Conservation Association office in San Francisco, thank you for your help as well in making this edition of Tree Huggers International possible. You can check out the NPCA online at npca.org. That's www.npca.org. .org for the National Parks Conservation Association. Big thanks as well to our friend Paul Lancour for his technical assistance in making this program possible. Thanks again for your time and help, Paul. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. As producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, you can email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. You can also access the Tree Huggers International page via the FM94.9 website at www.fm949sd.com. Also, find Tree Huggers International on Twitter and Facebook, and our Twitter address is at TreeHuggersINTL. Tree Huggers International content is now also available on iTunes. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. We'll be back same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well.